This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
What are you broadcasting in 720?
Hold on, Steve. I said, are we on?
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Oh, hello. I don't know.
Hi, guys.
Oh, this is cool. Wait, look at this. I could look at, hi, Katie.
You can wave at Katie.
Yeah.
Steve, get your hand out of Katie's.
I'm not trying to smack her. No. Hi. There we go.
Is it still buffering? High five. Hold on, Steve. Let's take a. Are we buffering?
We are buffering.
Well, we'll just.
Here goes something. Here comes the smoking nun. Now it's buffering again.
Could it be because you're in 1080i rather than 720? Because you're dual streaming, especially?
Could be.
Yeah, I keep saying that 1080, I think, killed me.
Oh, hi.
Stop the buffering. Let us pray. Hang on.
We're trying to figure out if we're buffering or not.
We don't know. We don't know where we're at. But I like this.
Yeah.
We're buffering. We're buffering.
Let's see. It seems like the I have sound. Here we go. It's okay now. It's working now. Good.
Mine's buffering.
Refresh your browser, Katie. That might be thing to do with it. So
I have sound. Here we go.
Oh yes. Okay.
Who is that lovely voice? Hello, everybody. Sorry about that. That choppy intro. For whatever reason, sometimes I think Steve has figured out that anytime we restream, which by the way, we are dual broadcasting to the Non Sequitur channel. And hello, everybody on the Non Sequitur channel. And we are also streaming to Without a Crystal Balls channel. So, yes. Hello, people without crystal balls. nice to see you. But yeah, so we're trying to figure out some of those tech things with restreaming. But just bear with us. If there's any problems, just let us know in the live chat, and we'll see if we can
refresh.
No, nope. Everybody says we're good on this end.
Are we?
Yeah, everybody says we're good. So tonight we're going to be discussing a very serious topic, one that is sort of it's gut-wrenching to hear about, but I think it's important to hear the story from a different perspective and how it affected or how it can affect people. And I'm sure that there will be places where, you know, it gets, you know, pretty rough. But we're going to do our best to make sure that we stay focused on the outcome, which is to hopefully, if there's anybody that's dealing with a similar situation, that they can find some kind of words of encouragement or advice, and maybe make this sort of situation, if you are dealing with it, a little bit easier. Because I think if you take some of the things that you hear tonight to heart, and the advice that this horrible situation can somehow be used in the long run, you know, you can have a silver lining out of it, which you know, as much as you can. So before we dive in, Steve, do you have anything that you'd like to put out there?
Hey, we're still buffering on my side. I think
it may be just your internet connection, Kate, because
it depends on your thing. If you're buffering, what I would recommend is can you downgrade it? Like try to go down to like 144 and watch it that way.
Yeah, we're fine on this end.
Yeti. Yeah, because I'm actually fine on my end as well.
No, it's tell them to, my people are saying
I am watching.
Oh, it's buffering. It's buffering on her channel that you're saying.
I am watching your channel, Katie. It's not buffering for me. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Refresh, folks. Refresh.
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 Steve, was there anything
refresh coming up? Don't do it. Like that? No, I'm not at the moment.
It's okay. Still buffering on my channel.
So I'm going to turn it over to Katie. And Katie, if you will tell us what we're going to be talking about, and let's dive in.
My channel is still buffering really bad, so people can't watch it. Like
Dave's watching it on your end. Some people just have to refresh, and there are some people that say it's buffering when it's not. It's hard to tell, but Dave will let you know if it's acting up, because he's watching your stream and your bit rate.
Buffering is bad. People are leaving. I don't know.
Dave, is it buffering on your end?
It's buffering on my end. I'm trying to watch it, and it's
It's not buffering here.
It's like buffering every...
It's not buffering. Well, it's not buffering
at it is.
It's not buffering. Well...
it's buffering for everyone. It has to be buffering, because everyone is buffering.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, exactly.
Well,
I'm going to go channel on your right now.
What do you propose we do at this point?
Well,
it's not buffering for me on your channel.
The only feasible thing to do would be to
let's start it again. Let's see if it fixes it. Okay, it's going out. It's 720 at 4.4 kilobits, basically.
All right, this is just going to start. Let's just start a new stream, too, right?
It's, well, yeah.
That's good, though.
Let's go.
Okay. I think we're back. Hopefully the buffering is fixed. We're going to regroup. And if you're watching this video later on and not live, then we had some technical issues. We're starting a new stream, though. So
we're going to sort of,
we're going to skip past the introductions again. You all know who we are, hopefully. And if not, then you will soon learn. I'm Kyle. Steve's here. Katie's here. This is Smoking Nun. Dave's producing, and we're going to be talking about a very serious topic tonight. One that is it's bound to it's bound to strike a nerve with a lot of people. But I think that if we take this situation and we use it for something good, which is if anybody is maybe going through a similar situation, maybe you will take some of the story that you hear tonight and apply it, and some of the things that Leah, who we'll be talking to, has learned through her harrowing trip through this. Leah is extremely brave for coming on and sharing her story, and we are very happy to have her here. And I'm going to let Katie introduce Leah a little bit more in depth and tell us what we are going to be talking about tonight.
Sure. So Leah actually reached out to me after watching a stream that I did about a woman who was victimized by a friend who actually committed a crime, and I helped this woman tell her story. And Leah reached out to me and said, that really resonated with me, and I was wondering if you could help me. And so she explained to me what happened, and she asked if I would write her story. And I thought, you know, what better way for her to tell her story would be to do it in her own voice and come on to the Smoking Nun. So I asked her, and she's come, and she's been very gracious in doing so. She's all the way from down under, and she's in Australia. Can you say hi, Leah?
I don't think she can, because while we were sitting there messing around, she got disconnected. So let me log in with my account.
Australian Wi-Fi. Yeah, you guys don't know this, but most of the infrastructure for Australia's internet is basically a string with a couple of plastic cups they use on it.
Yeah.
That's kind of their internet.
Well, she's down. Her internet is down. They had a lightning storm, so.
You log in and get it up.
You can tell when Dave's working hard. I love that.
I swear, you guys, we're going to get this started. I promise. So Leah was featured on.
Hold on, Katie. Now everybody over on this side is saying that it's buffering. What the?
Multi-streaming is a bad idea, guys.
Here's what we need. We need commercials. We need sponsors for commercials, so we can just go to commercial break.
Hello,
or at least have a we need a splash screen. Yeah, we need a splash screen that just says having technical difficulties. Be back soon.
So
that's a good idea. Actually.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us?
The most pressure for Australia's internet is basically string.
She's watching the live feed.
Leah.
Oh, Leah, turn down your.
I'm here.
So you want to turn down the volume of your live feed?
Yeah, I've just switched it off.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just said that you had reached out to us or to me to help tell your story, and I didn't give a ton of information. So I was just saying that you are here to join us to share your story. Your story started back in 2014. Do you want to say hello to everyone on the Non Sequitur and Without a Crystal Ball channels?
Hello, everyone. I'm so glad to be here. I love Non Sec. I've been watching for, I don't know, maybe a month, and I just love it all. So really glad to be here.
Thank you.
I'm
glad you're here.
Can she see us? I'm doing the heart symbol. Can she see that?
No.
Love? Oh, she can't see us. Okay, we're doing the heart symbol. Which, by the way, this took me a massive amount of weeks to perfect. By the way,
I approach Katie because I know she covers the hard stuff. So,
I do.
Yeah, that's why I went to Katie, and she does a wonderful job of it too. So,
thank you. So, in 2014, can you tell us a little bit about? So, you were involved with a man named Philip.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were in a long-term relationship. Do you want to tell us a little bit about just sort of the start of your courtship and your relationship?
Okay. In hindsight, a lot of superficial charm. I was sold a dream and given a nightmare. So it was one of those very quick moving things, went too fast in hindsight, got swept up in it, moved in together way too soon. There's some red flags there.
Yeah. How quickly were you guys together before you moved in together?
It's hard to remember now. It must have been maybe 6 months. Yeah.
Okay.
Went through some really tough times together because he had a bad back, and he had like 5 back operations. And so I was quite swept up in taking care of him through all that. And I think that kind of thing maybe affected my ability to evaluate what the relationship was really like.
Because you were busy taking care of him.
Yeah, we had a lot, you know, we just, you know, had a lot of bad luck, health issues and, you know, and yeah, just, and also it just wasn't something that I had the opportunity to look at closely, and that's something I've learned since all this.
So when you tell us about, I guess, what was leading up to when everything sort of fell apart in the months before, what was the relationship like?
It was miserable. What was going on was the relationship slowly became more and more emotionally abusive, and I was getting more and more worn down. I was depressed. I developed chronic fatigue syndrome symptoms, which ended up meaning I couldn't work. It's hard to say now how much I can blame that on him. At least a portion of it. It's definitely a factor. When I talk about the emotional abuse, I'm talking about, it's a bit difficult to get into because it's also, a lot of it I don't remember, to be honest. A lot of it comes, you know, used to come back in bits and pieces and, then I forget. So it's a lot about breaking my spirit in a very subtle way. So it's a little bit hard to describe in words. We can talk about, like, some people might have heard of gaslighting. I was shut down if I tried to raise any issues in the relationship. And there was that cycle of abuse that people might be familiar with in physically abusive relationships, where it would be going really good. He'd do all the right things, and then you have that period of it getting uncomfortable and unpleasant and walking on eggshells again, and then it getting really horrible, and then, you know, it, that cycle of abuse where it keeps continually going round and round in circles where there's the sorry and then the, yeah, so.
I think I would explain.
Can explain right now.
No, I think you've done a great job. No, you've done a great job. I think, you know, anyone that's in an abusive situation knows that there are ebbs and flows and you go through a honeymoon period after a fight and things settle down and it gets better. And then things start to sort of go on a decline and then they escalate and then you have your blow up again and then it's back to the honeymoon period. And it's just a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. And I took a long time to explain it. So, yeah.
It's okay. I think I told you I was in a similar situation.
Sorry, what did you say?
Oh, I said I was in a similar situation. So I think I think I told you that when you reached out to me. So
yeah,
in a lot of the stuff that you had shared with me in the different documents and the videos, it sounds like in the sort of the days leading up to when you made the discovery, what was it that made you feel like you needed to, I guess, do some sleuthing on what he was up to?
So it became really clear that he was having an affair. And when he left that night and I knew what he was doing, I decided that the best place I could start looking was online to figure out what he was up to. So it was just like trolling his Facebook friends and things like that. And what I ended up doing is he had a common username he used on online forums, on all of them. So I just whacked that into Google. And, you know, the first couple of pages were all normal. It was just his presence online. Then I think it was the third or fourth page of the Google results. That's what led me to what I found.
Okay. So we're not going to talk a ton about what we found, but we should probably give the viewers a little bit of an understanding about what it was that was found. So when you ended up on this website, you came in touch with images, correct?
Yeah, so it's a website that seems to walk a very fine line with what's legal in all areas of pornography. And so the idiot had made this profile public. And so I had enough information about him with secret questions and whatnot to actually get into that account.
Okay.
And what I saw on there was enough to break me in that moment.
And you... based on the records and your statements with to police, you stumbled upon images of young girls that were inappropriate.
Yeah, so he had uploaded pictures of a family friend who was young. They were just from her Facebook, so she was clothed. Everything on this website was technically legal because the underage children were closed, but the comment underneath one of the pictures was enough for me to know exactly what was going on. So that moment, I can't even describe what I felt in that moment when I read that comment. And I was screaming and crying and on the floor. I know I heard my neighbors shut their window because they must have been able to hear me. He wasn't home either, so I was alone. I have no idea how long I was, you know, distraught like that for. I have no idea. A lot of that's fuzzy exactly what happened. I know. But the next thing I did was call a friend. So that's what happened with that part of it.
Let me ask a question here. When you found that, what was sort of your mindset in terms of how long did it take before you were able to wrap your mind around like the totality of the situation and what you were going to do, you know, like what the next step from this is?
I knew straight away I had to call the police. But at the same time, I was afraid because what if I caused all this trouble for something that's not that bad? It's quite conflicting ideas, because even if our relationship was off in the gutter, you still care about this person on some level. You spent that many years with them, so they still mean something to you, and there is a level of feeling like you're betraying them. Now that feeling of betrayal did not last that long, but definitely over the first few weeks until I found out exactly how bad it was, I felt that. It doesn't perhaps seem logical now or in hindsight, but that, of course, you feel that way.
Sure.
Right.
Go ahead, Katie.
So you obviously were extremely distraught and hysterical, and you had a friend that came and helped you.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like she picked you up and you were able to, you know, go to the police. What was that like when you were actually sitting there trying to explain what you had seen? And like, what was, can you even recall that? Is it just a blur?
Yeah, most of that's a blur. I went to my friend's house and she called the police for me. I wasn't able to do that. I remember the police wanted to speak to me alone, and I didn't want that because I wanted my friend there with me, but that, you know, and I remember lighting up a cigarette and getting in trouble off the police officer for smoking. But I'd managed to take screenshots of everything I'd found, and I had my iPad with me. And, you know, the senior constable had a look at that and discussed things with me. And they wanted, what I found was not technically illegal because these girls were clothed. It was the comment underneath that was enough to raise serious suspicions. So, I don't think the police would have been able to do anything about it unless I gave permission for them to take all of his devices. And so that's what they asked me to do. So I had to sign some paperwork, and they came to my house. We went back to my house, and this is, you know, in the early hours of the morning, they took all of his devices, and he still wasn't home. He said he wouldn't be long, and he was still out up to no good. So, you know, in all of this too, I'm afraid of how I'm going to deal with him now, because this I don't know who this person is anymore. And the police officer actually said to me, do you feel safe? Do you need to be afraid? And he was offering support in that way. And I actually said, no, he's fine. But when things started to tick over, I started to get quite afraid of the situation.
How long was it from the time that you, you know, roughly, if you can remember, from the time that you found the stuff on the computer to the time that the police were involved?
Would have not been more than 3 or 4 hours.
Wow. Okay.
So when I got in the car, I already knew I needed to call the police. But when I got in the car with my friend, she said, "You know, you have to call the police." And I said, "I know." There was never any doubt in my mind about that.
Right.
But I do know that some women who go through this struggle with that part of it a lot more.
Sure.
Sure.
You didn't really have time to just sitting here thinking. You didn't have time to really process and grasp the totality of the situation, you know, which I mean, absolutely did the right thing, but you didn't have time yourself to really sit down and think through what had just taken place and how different your life was going to be from this point on.
And there's so many factors that come into how much was going to change and what was going to come from that. And to be honest, I didn't have an opportunity to start healing for at least a year because of all the shit that came after.
It must have just felt like a tornado.
The first year I was either completely disassociated, nobody was home, robotic, couldn't retain information for very basic things. When I had to apply for welfare, I couldn't even fill out the form. I had to ask the social worker to arrange to get the forms filled out for me. I verbally answered the question. So I was either completely disassociated or in absolute agony, pain, crying, so feeling the trauma.
I guess, Katie, should we go to when he finally did come back and you had to confront him?
She actually didn't confront him.
Oh, okay.
This is the craziest part of the story. So I was reading through, and I want to thank you, Leah, for sharing those documents with me because it really helped fill in a lot of the blanks that weren't included in some of your other interviews. But, you know, after Leah found these images, her friend picks her up and she goes to the police station. And it's like, you are so brave to do that right away. And you are so, I mean, you are so brave to do that. Like, you should be so proud of yourself for taking that step and having the, you know, the wherewithal to know that you had to do that. So I'm sure it was absolutely traumatic. And, you know, I think the most telling part of the documents that you had shared with me was this. You go back to your house the next day, or you text him that you found the images, and he sends you back something sort of hostile, and then you never hear from him again.
He got home. I stayed at my friend's house, and he got home at 2 or 3 in the morning and texted me and said, "Where's my iPad?" And then I really didn't know what to do. And to be honest, I would have just, I didn't want to speak to him. I never, never, ever wanted anything to do with that person again, ever, on any level, and still don't. But I have 3 dogs, and I didn't know who this person was anymore and if he was a danger to myself or the dogs. Now, in hindsight, he wasn't unsafe in that sense, but that's how I felt at the time. I was so scared for my dogs. I thought, will he harm the dogs because of me recording him? And so it was really, really hard. But I decided that instead of confronting him in person, it was safer for me to message him and risk not being there when I did that with, you know, to see if the dogs were all right. It felt like it was a horrible decision, but in the end, I think I texted him an hour later. I told him what I'd found and I told him to get out of the house. And that's the last I heard of him. Where's my iPad?
Wow.
Oh, wow. He didn't respond to your text that you sent him?
No.
Mm. He must have known that he knew the jig was up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say he went into a serious panic. You know, he did end up in a psych ward for quite a while. I believe maybe he was faking it, but, you know, he might have, you know, had a true psychotic break because he knew that he was screwed, basically. And I still, you know, at this moment, I still didn't know what they were going to find on his computers. So, but he knew. Mm.
You only saw those images, those like closed images. So you didn't even know what was coming.
No. And that was really a difficult part of it. It takes a while to examine them because they have to do it, you know, properly and,
sure.
I don't think the police always get back to you straight away either, whether you're reporting this or not. So, you know.
And I know it's, you know, we say that hindsight's 20/20, but looking back now that you've had some time to sort of process things, do you look back and are there any like sort of behaviors or things that you look back and see that there may have been something to that? Like, was he acting in a specific way? Was he doing like weird things? Like, I'm asking so that people maybe if they're, like I said earlier, are going through this similar situation, things that, you know, sort of they can, or you can look to and say, well, looking back, you know, he did this and it was odd and maybe it will, you know, connect with some people. Did he have any behaviors that you look back and sort of connect with what he was doing? Or was he just really good at, you know, sort of hiding that side of him?
There is some things, but, you know, that the things that I think of could amount to any number of reasons, not just what he was doing. He was very, sure, very private with his social media and what he did on his computers and stuff. And I respected that because that's what I'm like in a relationship. I respect someone's privacy. I trust them. So really when he found me, he found probably the perfect person to just allow him to do whatever he wanted. So yeah, not being open about his, you know, everything with his phone, his computers and all those things. As far as covering who he really was, he did a very, very good job. I mean, even if we watched a show that might cover this topic, we watched a Louis Theroux one, that documentary that talked about this, and I can remember him having quite a strong reaction to the men in that documentary in a hateful way. I can't remember exactly what he said, but, you know, he spewed hate. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's some kind of projection, but if you had to raise that subject with him, he would react just like any other human being.
I know exactly the Louis Theroux documentary you're talking about. I love Louis Theroux. I think he's fantastic. And
he is.
I know several in several instances that came up where the guys that he was talking to in the documentary that were at the that halfway house, I think it was that they're at, they would say the same thing. And I think it's exactly what you said, a projection. It's sort of that need to be extra vocal almost to a certain extent so that it throws.
Yeah, it really works quite well. Who would suspect someone who's got such strong opinions about it? And you've also got to throw in that these guys often very, very, if you want to go into cross TV, personality disorders, narcissism, mm-hmm. probably some of them are psychopaths, I don't know. I believe my ex is probably on that narcissism. Yeah, he was on the narcissism spectrum. I just won't say personality disordered because that's not my place to say that. Very, you know, they're manipulative. And if you just imagine yourself, if you had a secret thus bad, what the amount of energy and effort you would put into covering it up.
Yes.
The problem with what happens with women like myself is they become part of the grooming process. We're groomed to believe that they are the good guys. Just, you know, they just come across as normal guys. You know, the typical offender of this is, you know, 30-something white working middle-class man. Like, I mean, that's obviously not the only thing. Like, there is others, of course, but, you know, that's quite a typical situation. And they don't have criminal histories. They're just normal guys. Everyone in their world becomes part of that manipulation to cover it up because so much is at stake.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, and you are used in a way as the.
Oh yeah. I said early on, I was his cover to present a normal life. When I was able to sit down and, you know, I became quite obsessed with figuring out what he was up to in the early weeks. So I got into his Facebook, I got into everything, and what I discovered was just a completely different person to what I knew. So some offenders have I'm trying to say it in a way that's some offenders are coming from a different angle. So his offending seems to be more on he seems to be interested in anything that's wrong or taboo or weird or not so much a preference for the illegal stuff. So
yeah.
I had no idea. We had a normal vanilla relationship. He never, I think the first or second date we went on, yeah, it would have been second or third actually, he said to me, oh, would you be into having threesomes? And I said, not my thing. And that was the weirdest it got. And that's not even weird. So he had this whole double life with his sexuality. I saw online, he participated in that before I met him, while I was with him. He was up to all sorts of stuff. And when we get into the really yuck pathology of it all is some of these people he was talking to online, he would talk about me doing the things that he was actually doing or making up stories that involved me and him in some kind of... He said we had a 15-year-old girl staying with us. We were looking after her, and he accidentally walked in on her while she was in the bathroom. He told this to a friend at work. And that's just a complete load of crap. We didn't have anyone staying with us. It was like this weird, delusional fantasy world. So in that sense, it's a bit different to how most people would see these offenders who... their interest is just in that illegal, that child abuse material. He had a vast array of interests.
I may have missed this when I went to tend to my dog, but when the night that you found what you found, did he, how did you know to go look there, because I may have missed that part. But like, did he generally leave like his iPad or his computer open and available for you to you know, sort of look through, or was this like a one off chance that he maybe left it and it was where you could have access to it?
So I went snooping around online because I thought he was having an affair, which he was. And so I whacked a username into Google that he often uses, and I found it on a really a pornography website that walks a fine line with what's legal. He had a profile on there, and I was able to get into that, and that's where I found what I found.
Gotcha.
So I was just looking for the chick he was having it off with, basically.
Right.
And
yeah.
what did you stumble into? My goodness.
Yeah. So so let's go to where. So the police have his electronics, and it, you know, you said that it takes them a while to, you know, do their investigation. How long was it before he was contacted by the police on this, and either, you know, arrested or interviewed? How did that play out?
Okay, so because he ended up in a psychiatric ward, he was in there for, I think it was 2.5-3 months. The police basically were waiting at the door when he was discharged. So it was a few months after and I'm pretty sure he got legal advice while he was in the hospital. He did, because he made a no comment interview when they did charge him. I'm not exactly sure what it's called now, I forget. He was able to delay any court proceedings whilst he was recovering from his mental illness. So he was technically incapacitated to stand up and plead. And so they gave him like a year to get better.
And so so it ends up that the police do a full sort of evaluation, and they look through everything that's on his hard drive and in all of his digital footprints, and they find 30,000 plus images, hundreds of videos, and he has for himself that wasn't uploaded. Is that correct?
Sorry, say that last bit again.
He had all of these images that he hadn't uploaded. They were just on his driver.
No, so he's only ever downloaded. If he had have uploaded, he would have been charged with a different offense, which is a more serious one.
Okay. But he had downloaded 32,000 images.
Yeah, so I don't think 32,000 is technically child abuse material. It probably would have been, knowing what I know now, all different types of pornography. So the police facts state there was 32,000 images and hundreds of videos, and then they sample that because you can't have the computer forensic people looking at it all. And so they sample that and then categorize it into levels of severity. So the majority of his images and videos were in the worst two categories. I won't go into detail of what that actually means, because it might be too much for people. But if you Google CETS scale, if you want more information on that, you will know what I'm talking about.
Yep, they were level 4 and level 5.
And it's rough, everyone. Yeah. So just make sure you know that before you Google those levels, it's a tough thing to read. Very tough thing.
So Don't do it just to traumatize yourself. Do it if it's important to you for some reason. I don't want to encourage people to go off traumatizing themselves more. But, you know, if you want to know, you can.
Absolutely.
So with, you know, I think someone in my chat wanted to just make the point of saying that, you know, with individuals that are Godless Recovery, actually wanted to just give you a little pat on the back and just say that they're perfect. These individuals spend their lives perfecting their mask. They're monsters, but they're charming and dubious at the same time. So the day that you are at, obviously everything comes crashing down and your entire life, everything that you've built with this man, and you were with him for almost 6 years, you owned a home together, you had three dogs, you guys had, in all intents and purposes, sort of a de facto, or in the United States, common law marriage. So you were very invested in this relationship. So not only that day you find these and that world comes crashing down, but then there's this reality of, who the heck is this person? What did that feel like?
A lot of how I feel about him is quite numb. It's gone. A lot of it, but if a thought that often comes up about it, which I don't dwell on this stuff much anymore, but when I did, it was mostly at, disgust isn't a strong enough word, but disgust that you'd slept next to someone you didn't know for that long and that they were carrying something so vile, and it turns your whole perception of the relationship on its head. And so I guess that's the most I can put into words, because basically how I feel about him is quite locked away. I feel nothing.
That's
to be expected, because that's how you deal with it. That's just what happens if you can't cope. I guess it's just a way of coping. The brain just locks it off.
Sure.
So you, I mean, more than likely, just it's so traumatizing that your body is protecting yourself from this. And I would imagine that it felt like a complete violation on so many different levels.
Yeah. I haven't spoken publicly about this before, but I feel okay about it now to talk about how it feels like a sexual violation. I don't want to say that to diminish other victims of sexual assault or other types of violation. I don't want to put myself on that same level. But, of course, you would not consent to any kind of sexual relationship if you had known what was in the mind of that person.
Sure. If it was like that. You're very valid in feeling that way.
Absolutely.
So, and it's something a lot of women I've spoken to who have gone through this, we all feel the same way. We all deal with that issue. I did a lot of crying, of course, in the early days, but one night I remember specifically was thinking that my sexuality was actually gone forever. I cried. I thought, I am never, ever going to be a sexual being ever again. That was my belief at that point. And it was horrific to feel that way.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, right. I mean, you've been with someone who's lied and has taken intimacy between the two of you. And I mean, that's so violating to know that he lied to you to his core and you bought that, but he's so convincing and he's so charming and he spun this elaborate lie. And yeah, I can see why that would be extremely hard.
What happened when once the police found out everything that he had on there? Take us through the legal aspect of it. What happened to him legally?
So when he was discharged from the psych ward, he was charged, and then his lawyers got him that applied for that time to recover. So, and whilst he was incapacitated, he was also his parents took over his financial and health matters. And that's the big part of the story too, because his parents wanted to squash me. They were out to get me. And so when it came to the family law situation, they were running the show and they were absolutely relentless. And this is part of the reason why I couldn't start healing, because they would just, it felt like absolute torture that they were just carrying on like children. You know, in the way that lots of family law matters go, but it was just, I just could not deal with it. But as for the criminal part, so yeah, he got that time to recover so he could enter a plea. And then he applied for not guilty for mental health reasons. I don't know what was in that application. I don't have access to all the court proceedings. I wasn't there. That's where the police screwed up a little bit. They didn't let me know what was going on before it was happening. So I did miss out on some of the things that happened. But so the judge rejected his, you know, not guilty by insanity crap. Of course, it's quite rare that judges allow that anyway. And so then he promptly pled guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Australia, when he was charged, the sentencing was very soft. It's gotten a bit stricter now, more harsh, but he had no prior convictions for anything, so his sentencing was a joke, really. He got a 12-month good behaviour bond and was ordered to continue seeing his psychiatrist for another year. So that's it. Oh, and he's gone on the sex offenders register, but only for 8 years. I have no idea how they come up with 8 years. Like, why not 10? Why not 15? Why not forever? I don't know. That's one thing that's a problem here is the sentencing. So.
He didn't even spend any time in prison, is what you're saying, right?
No. The consequences for him were less severe than for me, I think. Although I haven't had no contact with him, so I don't know what's happened in his life.
Let me tell you, Leah, I spent a year in prison for cocaine, an entire year.
Mm.
And he didn't.
The sentencing between Australia and US is very, very different. We're pretty soft, even on rapists and murderers. So, you know, I mean, what to do with them is a completely different conversation, and it may not be jail. And it took me a long time to come to that conclusion, because what do we do with them? I'd like to put them all on an island so they can just, you know, be thrown some food and can't harm anyone. I mean, I think one solution is that they all be locked up forever. You know, that keeps everyone safe. But if you put one in jail for 5 or 10 years, they re-offend. So it's not serving any purpose to put them in jail like that. So what are the other options? Can they be treated? Professionals, it's rare for professionals to want to treat them. Like, why would you want to deal with that? And there are some around. I don't know a lot about that because I haven't looked into it, but I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I know the answer has to be whatever keeps kids most safe.
Sure. Leah, I need to interrupt you.
I think there is different types of offenders, and so there may be hope for some of them to be rehabilitated through therapy and whatnot. that's probably a controversial statement. I know people get very, very emotional and reactive about this, and it's not uncommon to see people wanting to string them up. that's also a valid statement. You know, I want whatever is going to keep kids safe to happen.
Sure. And I think that's definitely the right answer. With this situation, I find it troubling that the punishment for this was really there was no sort of punitive push against him to reduce the risk that this might happen again. You know what I mean? Mm. Like there was no sort of he really didn't get punished whatsoever. If you think about it, that's an egregious crime. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, and I think and it's hard because in the United States we treat this so differently, and he would have been locked up and he would have gotten time for this, and that those amount of images would have gotten him in so much trouble. And we do have programs that they go through in prison specifically for these types of offenses. I think Steve had a question, or this way? No, that way.
I was going to ask Steve a question.
Go ahead. That's my first one. There we go. Now she figured it out. We're doing weird things on camera here. There we go.
What would you say, Steve, is the because thinking about it, when Leah brought it up, I can't come to an answer. What is the solution? Can people who have this this propensity to do these sort of things, can they be rehabilitated? Is that something that can be sort of conditioned out of them? I don't know.
I think Leah said it perfectly, actually. As a parent myself, my primary consideration is the safety of the children, right? What needs to be done to protect the children? That is the number one priority. It's not the what's beneficial to the perpetrator. It's not, to anything else but to the children. Can they be rehabilitated? Sometimes. I don't think the propensity probably goes away. I think what happens is that people are trained in when they go to psychotherapy and they go to these professionals to learn how to not act upon it. And that's my concern. I'm not a thought police. I really, it just sounds odd. I don't really care what people think in their head, because that's in their head. That's not something we should really be concerned about. It's the actions they take because of those thoughts, right? That's what we see the consequentialism of, right? Because those are something that has actual effects on people. And so if they can diminish that, then I think that's an effective means of treatment. And I would call that, for all practical purposes, they're not cured by any means, but at least rehabilitated, right? You had mentioned, and Katie, real quick, that in the States here where we're at, there's far more incarcerations for these types of things. People remember the story from Jared, right, from Subway. He got some time. We had a person in our community that got 10 years. And Kyle had asked about signs, things to be aware of and look for. And there is none. I knew somebody for a very long time, not a single sign, didn't talk about anything sleazy, didn't talk about anything controversial, really. They just did their thing. And come to find out, they got arrested and got 10 years. 1 year doesn't seem like something that would happen in the States. That's not even for a misdemeanor, a bad misdemeanor around here.
People are saying maybe chemical castration. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm okay with that. But I think, here's my ethical concern with chemical castration is if it's on a voluntary basis or not, right? I mean, I'm okay with chemical castration, but is it something that we should is it something we should force upon people? Because then we can become very barbaric in that case. So I have ethical considerations with that. But then again, I have to weigh the pros and cons with the safety of the children, just like, Katie talks about vaccines. What's the safety? What's our concern, right? The safety of the children to get vaccinated, or the rights and autonomy of an individual? I tend to go for society, but a lot of people stand for individual rights, and I affirm a lot of libertarian concepts. But I think as a society, there are arguments to be made that safety and health and welfare have to come first.
Oh, yeah.
Well, And I think what we forget too is that he wasn't a physical offender, but every single one of those images that he looked at was an abuse. Yeah, and it's, you know, a graphic abuse, and then it's a violation every time someone looks at that image. So then how do you train that out of someone that not, you might not have thought that you abused this person, but you actually did by looking at this image.
Yeah, I agree with that approach too. Yeah. Okay, Kyle.
I want to say to Leah, like, I don't think that the role that you played in potentially saving people from this issue, because we don't know to what extent it would have gone if he would have gotten, you know, if he'd continue to you know, get away with it, so to speak. You potentially stopped a bad situation from getting worse, and I think that you should definitely be commended for like how quickly you took action, because you didn't waste any time, you know, wanting to hear his side and give him the opportunity to talk you out of it. You stood your ground and you did the right thing, and that's a tough thing to do in that situation. So I think you should definitely be commended for how you handled that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the level thing. I haven't looked up what level 4 and level 5 is, and I'm still mulling over in my head if I really want to, but only because went back in the day when we had to do research on the whole Catholic stuff, it was very graphic, and so I do want to warn people, if they look into the stuff. I'm guessing that is probably something that's nothing that that many people have been exposed to before, for that level 4 and number 5. I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Because if it's anything like what I had to read for the reports on the whole Catholic thing, that was pretty disturbing.
Yeah, you'd be correct on that. Sorry, Katie, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, so Leah, I think one of the things that a lot of us forget about, and as a society, we get very laser focused on, is the offender and what they've done. But talk to us about what it is like to be connected to the offender so intimately. Like, how did your friends react to this?
Well, she was also a victim too, her and her daughter, because he had uploaded pictures of my friend and her daughter. So she was very supportive for quite a while. But it seemed after a while, when she wanted to move on from it, I was still suffering, and we fell out over that, because I said to her, you know, I brought up some issues with how I needed support, and she basically did not follow through on her promises with what I needed. So I lost that friendship. And when I did other media on this, which was quite large here in Australia, she absolutely, she went ballistic over it. She turned on me big time. So that's complicated, because that's more to do with who she is as a person. You know, she and her daughter were also victims in it too. So what happens is it reaches every corner of your life. Everybody you know. It's rare to come across people who know how to talk to you about it in a way that is helpful. So you do end up feeling quite alone in it, because when you tell people what's happened, they don't know how to react, because everybody, I think, has a switch in their brain that goes, nah, don't want to go there. And so when you're looking for support and everyone has that switch, you start to take it personally. And it took me quite a long time to realize that I can't take that personally. That's their way of coping. So, you know, I was really, really fortunate to find the right professionals to help me who got it. People, you know, professionals that knew how to deal with trauma and knew a lot about sex offenders. Without that outlet, I would have been totally screwed.
Yeah.
I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD. So you can draw the cause of that directly to him.
Sure.
So some of it is to do with what happened during the relationship, but that breaking point was that night I found what I found. Something just snapped in me, and I've never been the same again since.
Sure. Nor should you be. I think that's completely understandable. You mentioned a second ago the media. So you were contacted by several media outlets. What was that like in terms of dealing with sharing your story with millions of people? And what was sort of the reaction that you got from people that saw your story?
Okay, so when I did a national newspaper article, that was fantastic. It felt really empowering because I had to wait until he was convicted before I could talk about it, because I was very mindful of not doing anything that would put me in a bad light in case I had to be a witness if he pled not guilty. So I had to keep my mouth shut for the longest time. And this opportunity came up to do the newspaper article, and that was fantastic. Whenever with this stuff online, there is always very positive reactions, but I guess that doesn't translate through to the real world, which is unfortunate. And then I did 60 Minutes here in Australia, and that was very difficult. they were held to account with how they went about the whole thing pretty well, but they did manage to pull a Swiftie on me in doing kind of an interview I wasn't expecting on a different day to the main interview, in which they had an iPad in front of me and showed pictures of us that I'd given them from happy times when we were together. And, you know, at that point I was 2 years into recovery, and I really hadn't dealt with that aspect of him having happy memories and then what had happened. It didn't compute very well back then. So they triggered me really bad that day, and I threatened to pull the pin on the whole thing, to be honest. but the overall good that came from that story was, you know, I think it was like 3 or 4 months after that story, I was still getting messages from other ladies who had been through something similar and were getting... we're not feeling alone anymore. So it was definitely a great thing to do.
You know, I was excellent. I Googled your name earlier. Actually, no, I Googled his name, and I found an article on my
That can be amusing because yes. If I didn't do the media, if you Googled his name, nothing would have come up.
Right.
I at least have peace of mind that maybe if he meets another woman, she might be smart enough to Google his name.
Yeah. Well, I saw a letter, a blog post, for instance, on Mamma Mia, and it said, "To the woman that turned her husband in, thank you." And I was like,
yeah,
oh.
That's nice.
Yeah, and Mamma Mia is a really large outlet in, it's kind of like a People magazine, I guess, in some ways, or an Entertainment Tonight type of thing.
Do you know, like, I don't want this to come out the wrong way. Are you aware of his whereabouts today, like for safety reasons, not because you're keeping tabs on him, but like for you know, for the possibility of like either retaliation or just so you know, like not to be in the same, you know, however sort of distance from him? Are you able to keep like tabs on him to make sure that he stays, you know, away from you?
I have no idea where he is. I could guess.
Sure.
I don't feel I'm safe in that regard anymore. I used to. I moved an hour and a half away back to my parents' place, and I live on a farm now. That's where I grew up. And in the early days, I would be laying in my bed, and it's a quiet road. So if there was headlights, I would start panicking that Tim, he's coming down the driveway to get me. But I, once I got past a lot of that stuff, I'm able to look at him for who he really is, and he's really quite a coward. So I don't feel unsafe. I mean, I've done national media on him, and there was there was no retaliation then. So I feel as though as my fear of him wasn't grounded in reality at the time, no matter how real it felt. He's not a dangerous person to me in that sense.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
So how have you, like, how have you recovered? Where are you today?
So I threw myself into therapy for probably 3 years, pretty much nonstop. With a few breaks here and there, but I haven't been to, I actually lost my good therapist maybe 6 months ago, and being able to start again with someone new just doesn't work for me. I've tried. So, I've got the coping skills I need, and I guess I'm at a point of accepting that this is what I've got, and that's just what I have to deal with now. When I don't, if I'm not having a good time, I know what I need to do to get through that. the biggest effect is that I still, what causes what is an issue here? I have significant fatigue issues as well as the kind of PTSD stuff. And where one's feeding out, it's a chicken or egg situation. So that's my biggest challenge, and I still can't work because of these things. So,
how are you in terms of? And if this is a too personal of a question, please feel free to just not answer. Are you able? Do you think to get to the point where you are going to be able to be open to like a new relationship and build that trust back up with someone, or is that just something that you're just
The problem with that is that I have a very specific type of person I'm looking for, and I know exactly what it is, and that's not easy to find. It takes someone with a heart of gold needs to be with me, and you know, just generally speaking, there's the stigma about not working and having mental health issues. So that crosses off a lot of people off the list. Also, I live somewhere where it's not heavily populated, so there's all sorts of barriers with me finding the right person.
That's okay.
The right person will be fine.
Completely okay.
There's actually one really good thing that when I get triggered, sometimes it's for a good reason. So it can tell me something about someone that. Like it can be a little bit of a red flag, and I go, oh, why is that person making me feel PTSD? And quite often it turns out to be quite a good warning sign. So I have a quite good radar now.
So you've learned obviously a lot about yourself and.
Oh yeah. I'm a completely different person. It's quite confusing because I have all these limitations, but at the same time, it's completely changed who I am in a lot of positive ways as well. So it's a bit confusing like that sometimes.
I think that's the best way to take a situation like this is to be able to use it for some sort of good, whether it be in your personal life or in somebody else's. If you just like let it defeat you, you can't. I mean, you have to be able to take something like this, and as bad as it was, be able to see the positive benefits that have resulted because of this for you, and that you're able to recognize that and still not let it, you know, defeat you, and you're still willing to, you know, sort of be motivated to get up and face every day. I think, you know, that's a win. And as I said earlier, you should be commended heavily for your whole handling of this and how you've reacted to it. I think it's, I think you were fantastic in every aspect of it.
You're the ultimate survivor.
Absolutely. Do you have any sort of advice that you would give anybody that might be sort of either beginning to go through something like this, or is, you know, at the point where, they're kind of coming out of it? Well, how would you sum up your, experience talking to somebody else and telling them the, what kind of got you through to the end?
Well, I think the most important thing is to know that what they're going through and the trauma they're feeling, or the feelings, the confusion, the, you know, that early on crisis, that stage where you're going through that really heavy crisis stuff, that's kind of normal, and you're not alone in that, even if, you know, it feels like no one's validating that, because it is difficult to find that validation. Also, if it's possible, you need to find the right professionals to help, and that can be, you know, if I was traumatized by one of them, you know, early on, because she didn't know what she was doing. To get back up again and find the right person. And my goodness, when you're going through that, that's just really tough. It's just giving yourself the time. I was rather impatient too. I remember one of the professionals saying to me, you're looking at, you know, at least 2 years here of some really tough stuff. And I was like, you know, I didn't want to believe that. But, I mean, everyone's going to be individual at how much it affects them. But just being patient with that recovery and taking your time and working through it, the crisis part doesn't last forever. And that's hard to see when you're in the middle of it. And I think also it's just important for other people to know, if they come across someone who's going through these issues, whether it's a family member who's offended, or a partner or a relative who's been offended against, that finding that balance between protecting yourself from the harm, but also supporting the people around you without them feeling like they've been left out to dry because nobody knows what to do with them. It's really, you know, I think it's easy to go pointing fingers and saying, oh, people victim blame and people are not supportive when they should be, but there's some good reasons why people don't know what to do in these situations, and that's why this conversation is important. You might be scared of saying the wrong thing perhaps, or not know what to do, but there's nothing wrong with using phrases like, what can I do to help, do you want to talk, tell me if I say the wrong thing, do you need a hug, call me if you need anything. Those phrases are not ever going to be harmful, and they let that person know that you're there for them. And they might not take you up on that offer, but at least just them knowing that you're there makes a huge difference.
Well said. Yeah. Well said. Steve, do you have any, I know that as a father, you know, do you have any thoughts that you want to add kind of legal?
You know, it's hard for me to wrap my head around these types of things as a parent. Obviously, my daughter's at that age now where, you know, the potentiality for things happening are always on my mind, obviously. I mean, she's starting high school. She's a good looking girl. She's intelligent. She's outgoing. She's friendly. And so, you know, I do have to concern myself with all these types of possibilities. But I think the way you handle it, I have to agree with Kyle. I mean, I'm just very impressed at everything you did perfectly. It's the same thing I would have done in the same situation. So, you know, I just, my heart goes out. And I think that what you did was brave and honorable and ethical and exactly what I would have done.
Absolutely. And Katie,
you are amazing. And I'm so glad that you reached out to me and you are so brave. And I cannot wait to put this story out on my column and just, you know, let more people know about you and everything that you've done. And I think the underlying thing for all of this is that you are providing so much for women that probably don't feel like they have a voice and that have been victims. And, you know, I don't know why we don't talk about these things. We should talk about these things. You shouldn't have been, treated the way that you were. You weren't the person that was doing these things. You didn't know. I think sometimes it's hard for people to realize that any of us can be conned by anyone, that somehow we all need to feel like, oh, that wouldn't happen to us. So, you know, I'm just glad that you have come to this point where you are stronger and you're getting stronger. And, you know, I'm very happy to hear that you're open to the possibility of love again. That makes my heart very happy for you.
Yeah, I don't feel very optimistic about it, but I've done the work I need to do to be in a healthy relationship. It's finding someone else. I don't feel very optimistic just because I guess I have special needs, but I have my dogs. And I know lots of people are dog people out there, and without them, my goodness, I don't know that I'd be here. I really don't know I'd be here without my dogs. So
you're saying you got the dogs in the divorce?
Sorry?
Did you get the dogs? So you got the dogs in the divorce?
No, I had the dogs prior. This is like, you know, we had the dogs together. But I was the one collecting them. Yeah, they came with me.
Okay.
And I was able to keep them, thank goodness. So
I echo their, you know, their sentiments. I think that I'm very glad that you decided to come in and share your story with us. I know it's not easy. And I'm like extremely humbled that, you know, you consider our show, you know, something that you watch outside of being on it. That was, a huge compliment. And, I really appreciate that. It's nice to hear, you know, from anyone, but, you know, to, you know, sort of feel like you maybe get some joy out of what we do after what you've been through is pretty humble.
Yeah, it's so much easier to find like-minded people online than in real life. And so, you know, when find that little niche of people that, you know, I wouldn't have approached you guys if I didn't feel I could have a safe conversation. Like, no way would I do something like 60 Minutes again. When I say it wasn't worth it, I mean, like, it wouldn't be worth doing again. It was worth it at the time, and it was something I needed to do for me at the time, but I would not do that again. It was too much. Like, that kind of exposure was huge. So finding a safe little niche. That's great. And also, it's just taking it into another community as well. It's a bit more abroad than it had been before. So
we have a nice little community. I think we have a very nice community.
Just because I'm curious, what was it that that brought you to us? What show did you stumble upon us with?
Oh, I think I came to you via Mr. Atheist. So, I have a lot of interest in social and cultural influences, and I was raised an atheist. So I got quite interested in how religions affected our culture, and I was looking at how my grandparents raised my parents with religion, and just how, even though where I live a lot of people are atheists, there's still the remnants of that religious culture, especially with sex. That's actually the shame around sex and stuff. I've been quite interested in that, so that's how I got into the atheist religion talk. So I'm quite interested in it. So I get quite a lot of giggles out of Flat Earth too, so
it's funny.
Yeah,
because,
and I think she said she ended up on Smoking Nun too. So
It's funny because with the guests that we have come on, the ones that you wouldn't think would get a kick out of the Flat Earth shows are always the ones that mention. That's sort of how they connect it, is the Flat Earth. Like Dr. John Kroon, that came out of left field, but he's an astrophysicist.
He can't get enough of it.
Yeah, that binge watches Flat Earth videos.
He's appalled by it.
It's so funny. I can't stand that part of the show.
I don't begrudge people for that. I don't. I really get that. There are some people who are not going to want to watch Flat Earth, and I'll more power to you. I totally understand that. Trust me.
But there's people that don't want to watch the stuff that I offer on this channel either. My stuff is, a little bit different. So we all have. But the Flat Earth stuff, I mean, come on. It's good. It's comedy gold.
Oh, yeah. It's entertainment. Sure.
it's air quotes debates. Very much air quotes debates.
Yes. Discussions. Yes, absolutely.
Well done on the incels. Wow, I love that series.
Oh, thank you.
I love it all.
Actually one of my that's my personal just because I got so involved in that, and there was a positive outcome, even if only one person was changed because of that, those six series of videos and the stuff that you had to sit through, it made it worth it to me. And it's always good when you have that kind of ending. It makes
Gigasol's reached out to me a few times. He really has changed. So
he has. He's doing all sorts of voiceover work on Fiverr. He's created a his little voiceover page on Fiverr, and he's doing voiceover work for people. And he messaged me today. Every other day, he'll check in with me and let me know what's going on. Like, he's actively taking a step to change the way that he is, and it's only a matter of time before, as that confidence continues to build, that he'll he'll land him a girlfriend. And since that's the ultimate end goal in that thing, I'm just waiting for it. And he's not far away, because he's got a good personality, and he just got caught up in something that was dark, and he was able to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that's even if that's the only person that steps over and changes their mind, and we do 30 years of non-sequitur, it'll be worth it to me that one person was able to sort of turn their life around. And
you're gonna read.
You don't. And it's a weird feeling to do something like this and that happen. So I'm humbled every day. I pick and pretend and that stuff, but this is a I'm very lucky. I'll tell you that. I'm very lucky.
I was amazed that you reached out to me and asked me. I was like, it was very much like when Tara asked me. I couldn't even believe you wanted.
That's because I lost the bet.
No, I'm talking about Leah, but yeah, you too, Kyle. You asked me to join the show, and I was like, "What, me?" Yeah. But when Tara asked me to do her story, I mean, and the story that Tara was involved in was a national story here, and I was like, "You what?" I mean, this story was on People Magazine, and you know, like, what? So, I mean, and then to find out that by sharing what I did with Tara was what made you comfortable coming to me was like, oh, wow, there must be something to what I'm doing that's helping people. So it's, you know, it's like this work is grueling and it's, you know, this is a rat race in what we do. I mean, this is nonstop 24/7 for us. And so when this kind of stuff happens, it's that little silver lining that, you know, you're doing something that matters. So. Thank you for trusting us with your story.
Absolutely. And is there, Leah, is there anything you wanted to say? I'm going to give you the last word if there's anything else you wanted to say, and then we will close the show.
Okay, so there's a website that's a not-for-profit here in Australia run by a lady called Natalie who supports non-offending partners. So if there's anyone that's watching this that feels like they need some support, they can go to that website. And there's some resources and a peer support forum on that website. So you can find other ladies that have gone through similar things. So it's partnerspeak.org.au. And if we could pop that in the description, please.
Sure.
We'll put it on both, yeah.
And to everyone watching, I know I can probably speak for Steve and Katie when I say that if you ever feel like you're alone or, you know, you're overwhelmed and you just need somebody to vent and talk to, I can't give you any sort of professional advice or medical advice, but I am more than willing to have a conversation with you. So never feel like you're alone. You've always got at least
– Thank you.
At least three friends here.
I really appreciate that. Absolutely. That means a lot to me because, you know, I don't always get that kind of response. Like I've mentioned before, it gets stigmatized and people would just slowly back off and it's not nice, but no. I've come to understand why now. So it's not as bad.
We all of us have a wonderful following and they will embrace you and love you. And you are always welcome in my inbox anytime.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that goes for you out there as well.
I'll continue popping up in the live chat too.
Good.
Yay.
We look forward to seeing you. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate everything that you do. And we will be back tomorrow. Same non-sec place, same non-sec time. Same non-sec time. Yeah.
I hope it's a lighter topic this time.
I'm almost positive it will be. I don't think you can get much heavier than this one. But thank you again.
Anyone that feels a bit icky or something, just take some time to do something that feels good, like some music or a glass of wine or a bath or, you know, whatever it is that works. You
all of the above sound good to me.
Yes,
yeah,
I'm gonna go get a glass of wine and cuddle my dog. I think.
I'm not gonna say that Kyle's, because that one.
Kyle's gonna eat his Captain Crunch or no?
Cinnamon Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Yes.
Kyle,
he used to be a spokesperson for him.
Everyone wanted to know: did your grandma make the cookies on Sunday? Were there cookies from your grandma?
Oh no, she didn't. She didn't make them on Sunday. Jimmy and I got into a heated debate about cookies. I was explaining why my grandma's version of oatmeal raisin cookies were better than regular chocolate chip cookies.
I like
cookies,
and that's because she soaked she soaked golden raisins in Captain Morgan spiced rum a day before. And then fold them into the into the cookies, and it's.
Why haven't I ever thought of that?
Standing.
That's brilliant.
That sounds delicious.
That's. I got it now.
I have made oatmeal cookies. I'm going to try that actually.
That's, don't mess that's with my grandma.
Really brilliant.
Okay. Good night, everyone. We love you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.